welcome to the tech segment of We're Drunk and We Know Things. We're recording in JB's smokehouse because it's windy.
No, it's not Saturday.
Hey, oh, so we're still in JB's smokehouse regardless. We're drinking, I'm drinking Brewing by Numbers now. It's very nice. Strong. Rob is drinking a cup of tea with his little pinky out. He's not, he's drinking Brewing by Numbers too. Our producer is Reno Vegas, and we are talking about quantum computing?
Yeah.
Right.
That's what I do. I drink. And I know things.
Welcome to the show, baby.
Welcome indeed. So if you've listened to the movie segment, you'll know that Q was a little bit short on choices for movies.
Sure.
Q was less short on choices for tech. We actually had some good stuff in there.
But we chose this instead.
We didn't choose anything.
Our haters.
Our fans.
Our wee dork heads.
Adoring public.
We should make up a name for our fans. The wee dork heads.
I think we did the drunkards.
The drunkards. That's good because that encompasses quite a large swathe of the population. So.
Yeah. You decided that what you would like to hear us talk about is quantum computing.
You fucking idiots.
Now, it doesn't happen very often that we get a technical subject that I don't actually know much about.
And I do, so I'm doing this one. Not really, I'm
we
not.
We flipped no, it on its head. No. And it turns out that the reason that quantum computing is... Well, the reason I don't know much about it is because quantum computing is incredibly hard. That's what she said? No?
It's hard,
nothing?
Like diamonds.
Yeah. So I'm going to start with a disclaimer. That basically, to understand quantum computing, even at its most fundamental level, requires a working knowledge of quantum mechanics, which neither of us have.
So we're going to pause briefly while you go and read all them books.
Yeah, there's...
you know those books.
A couple of good Feynman books, there's a couple of articles. Basically, if you can make head nor tail of the maths on the Wikipedia page, then you're going to hate this, because we're going to massively oversimplify it, and half of it is probably going to be wrong.
Do you think we're going to get hate mail from Neil deGrasse Tyson? He's going to do one of his epic live tweeting of things, when he's like, the science isn't right there. And we're going to be like, shut up, Neil.
No, I'm going to be like, yes, Neil, it's not. Because the science is incredibly hard. So.
I'm so desperately trying to think of, like, harder than a something on a something, and just...
You got nothing.
No, got nothing. I'm going to drink this beer, and we'll go back. We'll go back and we'll put them back in post.
No, we won't remember to do that. What we are going to do, of course, is, in order to make me feel better about myself, is run back to something that I do know something about.
Cool.
So we're going to start by quantifying classical computing.
Right.
Because we've talked about this before.
Sure.
And this is basically the computers that we have at home, the computers that we have on our pockets, our smartphones, our tablet devices, and these are based on transistors.
I don't know if you know this, but the Apollo shuttle used less computing power than the phone you've got in your pocket.
Considerably less, yes.
Something about exponential that I don't understand.
Getting weird flashback triggers here. So classical computing, as we know, hopefully, is sure. Based on the concept of an electrical transistor. And the idea behind a transistor is that it can be in one of two states, one or zero, on or off, yeah?
Sure, yep.
Cool.
I remember this.
Now, the transistors themselves, so that can be either one or zero, are referred to as bits.
Right.
And when we want the computer to do something, what we have to do is reduce whatever we're trying to get it to do to a number.
Of course. Oh, yes, I remember all this. This is good.
Yeah,
long-time
cool.
Listeners will remember
and
this too.
We can represent that number in binary by just representing it in binary.
Yeah,
so,
ones and zeros.
Yeah.
Sure.
And then basically what our processors have are instructions or operation codes.
Right.
So these are predefined things that the processor knows how to do with binary numbers.
Oh, right, I'm with
so
you.
Like there'll be an operation for addition and for subtraction.
Right, yeah, yep, 100% and with you.
Generally speaking, a combination of a processor that knows how to work with binary in some fairly limited ways, and they are quite limited, and a bit of memory where we can put this stuff whilst we work on it,
mm-hmm.
called addresses,
right.
For no reason other than, you know...
Somebody called it that.
Yeah.
Cool.
that's the fundamental of a classical computer at the moment. The number of bits in the system determines the maximum value numerically that can be handled in one operation.
I hope you're making notes, people, because I am not. And
so this
keep
is
going.
What we call a byte.
Right, yes.
So okay. We have, say, for example, an 8-bit system, 16-bit system, 32-bit system.
Wait, 64-bit system?
Yes.
Nailed it!
And a 64-bit system can handle a number that is exponentially bigger than a 32-bit system.
Sure.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Cool.
And this is where it all goes to shit.
Not yet. Because different processors over the years have been evolved, and your modern computer is actually way more than just a standard set of 16-bit registers or 32 or 64-bit registers.
Right, yeah, yeah.
There's all sorts of helper processors and optimizations on the chip, so it can do things with, like, ASCII. It knows how to work with, potentially, if you're using your graphics card, graphics.
Okay.
It, you know, it understands things like vertices and polygons and all of this stuff.
Yep.
But they're all still fundamentally the same basic thing, which is transistors going from
ones
one
and zeros.
To zero.
It switches on a transistor.
There are some limitations to this.
Well, what happens if you need a two?
Well, two is a one and a zero.
No, I think you'll find a two is a one and a one, mate. I mean, I don't want to school you on
really?
Math.
So a one is zero, one.
Right.
What's next?
0, 1, 1?
No, 1, 0.
No, that's 10.
Don't mess with me in 2-bit binary, mate. I will own you.
Ooh, cool.
We get above 2-bit and I have to take my shoes off. Start drawing on the tablecloth. And there aren't any tablecloths in this place because it's so damn cool.
Sometimes when we do this podcast, I just think, he could say whatever he likes and I'd just be like, all right. I mean, I know that's the format of this podcast. He taught me wrong as a joke.
Oh, yeah,
oh, God, that's what's been happening, isn't it?
What, for the entire series? The entire thing has been a long-running Python
17 episodes of just being like, ah, well, wanker. There's a secret Twitter, isn't there, where you all laugh at me?
Well, yeah.
Oh, not about this, though. Anyway, moving on.
Right. There are limitations in the classical system, and the limitations are effectively caused by a couple of things. Classical systems execute in series, so each operation has to happen after the previous operation.
Yes.
Sounds logical, right?
You're
going to do one
yeah.
thing at a time.
Sure, makes sense, yeah.
Now, we fix some of these by introducing...
Much like a man. Can't multitask.
No. Can't multitask, yeah. Well,
joke's on you. I can use a keyboard and a mouse and wank at the same time, so that's definitely three things.
How many hands do you... Or what are you wank...
You don't have a prehensile penis.
No.
I'm like a dolphin. I can hold a bottle.
With your hands.
Yeah, so this is an episode where we don't really understand quite what we're talking about, so I'm just going to make loads of dick jokes.
It's going to get quite silly.
Cover it up with dick jokes, cover it up with dick jokes.
So we've solved this in a couple of ways by introducing parallelism. So this is the idea of having like multiple cores on a processor or multiple processors.
Right, yep.
So you might have like a 4-core thing or an 8-core thing or
whatever. I've seen them adverts.
Bing bong, bing bong. We're not saying that name.
We do have that one was Netflix. How lame is that, by the way, that Netflix thing is, what are you, Inception? Sort your life out, Netflix.
It works
Moving
for
on.
Them.
Well, yeah, it's not like they're doing struggling,
it
is
worse.
It?
Can you imagine what would have happened if the THX company went into media distribution?
Fair point. Yeah,
as
fair
every
point.
Episode is rattling the foundations of your house. Some problems simply cannot be efficiently solved in this way.
Right.
By doing stuff one after the other.
Right.
Now, these problems, there is an entire subscience of computational complexity.
Subscience, the science of submarines.
In this case, a subset of science, but also
sure?
subscience being the science of submarines.
I'm a subscientist.
And we refer to these kind of problems as being NP-complete. N being the difficulty of the problem, and
so
P
isn't
being
there that
the
mathematical
number
of penises
that you need to do it.
Isn't there the NP problem, NP squared or something, which is some kind of unsolvable mathematical
Not
problem?
Not unsolvable, it just cannot be done in any way other than doing it.
Hang on a minute. Did they invent quantum computing to solve PNP or whatever it's called?
Yeah.
Did I just blow this wide open? Oh shit, I cracked the case, guys.
And we're done.
It's alright. Do you know how I know that?
What?
I watch Numbers.
God.
Remember that show? Numbers? David Crumholtz at his best. That's why I know
Have
about
you
that.
Noticed, dear listener, that every so often we'll come across a bit where we're talking about computers and processors.
P versus MP, that's
and
it.
Mike always refers back to the fact that he watched this one episode of Numbers.
Yeah. Numbers
to,
is good, man.
We have to stop paying them royalties.
How do you think
this,
I know
right?
about game theory? That one episode of Numbers.
I thought you were on the game. So a good example of an NP-complete problem.
Sure.
Is what's referred to as the travelling salesman problem.
Go on.
I'm going to lay this out for you.
Good.
Given a list of cities,
right,
and the distances between each pair of cities,
right,
So literally, you've got a list,
yep,
and distance, but only between the pairs. You have to calculate the shortest possible route that visits, yep, every city and returns to the origin city.
Right.
Right. So this is the kind of thing,
easy,
that actually for us it might be.
If you had a map.
Well, you can put them on a map.
And a long-ass amount of time, you could probably work it out.
But fundamentally, the only way for a computer to solve this problem is to basically work through every possible combination.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
And then compare them.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
This is similar to how computers play chess.
It's like cracking a code or something, right? It's working out every different combination of all the different variables and then working out which is the most efficient.
But the key thing here is every combination.
Yeah.
So if we look at, say, the Travelling Salesman is a nice simple example, because we look at it and we think, well, you've got, you know, eight cities, so that's eight different potential points to visit and then return to the origin.
Yeah.
So you've got whatever it is, the power of eight.
Yeah.
So a whole bunch of different calculations. What happens when instead of eight cities we have 8 million points on the map?
Then you're proper fucked. You need a big-ass ruler.
You need a big-ass map room.
A big-ass map, yeah, shit.
And you roll the charts.
I just use Google Maps myself.
Yeah, weirdly, Google Maps actually does this for you, but they're having to kind of brute force it.
As soon as it came out of my mouth, I knew you were going to say that.
Or they save previous routes, or there's all sorts of different bits and pieces, but
so this can't
no computer can solve this any more efficiently than basically working out every single possible route and then working out from that which is the best.
Right, sure, okay.
NP complete.
Right. So you need a computer that can think creatively?
No, you need a computer that doesn't have to do everything in series, but we'll get on to that.
Okay, okay.
There are also physical limitations in the way that we currently construct transistors.
Right.
In other words, they keep making them smaller so that they can get more of them on the chip.
Sure.
And we're approaching the point where they're about as small as they can possibly get.
Right.
At which point we're kind of fucked.
Sure,
because then the processors and the computers have to start getting bigger.
Oh, right. So we're making computers smaller by making their transistors smaller, but it gets to a point that actually, if we want them to be more powerful, they have to start making bigger again.
Yeah, because you want to... Well, no, you want more transistors. Mm. Therefore, you can't make the transistors any smaller. You have to make the processors themselves bigger.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what I'm saying, yes.
Whereas what we've actually been in a position of is we've been able to double the number of transistors on the chip year on year.
Yeah,
Moore's law, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But the chips themselves haven't changed size.
Right.
So they've also been halving in size, more or less, year on year.
Right, okay.
Again, a gross oversimplification, and this is the bit that I actually know how it works.
Cool.
So we're off
it's
to a good
start.
It's
going very well.
Fair warning to our listeners, this is the point in this particular episode where the wheels are probably going to come off.
Here comes the science.
And then catch fire and then explode.
Can't wait to have a nervous breakdown.
This is so hard to explain. Right, so we now need to consider the next element of our journey towards quantum computing is basically quantum theory.
Cool.
Right.
I've got a book on this at home.
Really?
I do, seriously. In all seriousness. I have no idea. I've never read it. I've got a mate who's into physics, and he's like, you should read this if you want to know, like, basics of, like, quantum theory. You should read this. It's really in layman's terms. You'll really enjoy it.
If it's Feynman's book...
Sure. It's not Feynman's book. I don't know if it was Feynman's book. And he was like, yeah, you should definitely read this. And I was like, yeah, but, like, Jack Reacher. But, like, I haven't read all of Stephen King's books yet.
I haven't reread Terry Pratchett in ages.
Have you played Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze? Shut up. I haven't got the time.
This, by the way, is why we as a species are probably not going to make it. Anyway.
Well, me personally, that seems to be unreasonable.
No,
can't put that on me.
The general approach is could learn more about cutting edge physics,
hey,
or
man,
could make sure that Funky Kong gets through that level in one piece.
I don't play with Funky Kong, I play original mode. I have got a podcast about how I'm learning, man. If everyone had a podcast about learning, then
well, if you weren't getting drunk whilst learning and therefore completely
I didn't say I didn't have to be tricked. I didn't say I didn't have to be tricked.
And this isn't about learning.
Sure
face
it is.
It. We're in the entertainment category.
No, this is a documentary.
So quantum theory.
Sorry, just talking of entertainment theory, just very quickly as an aside, you may have seen on our Facebook page that we recently were entered into the Listener's Choice Award of the British Podcast.
Everyone was entered into the Listener's Choice Award.
So we lost to a very little known film podcast called Twittertainment, which is by Mark Commode. Had I known that
His
we were
name
up against
is toilet.
Mark Commode.
His name still means toilet.
Yeah, but mate, it's Mark Commode, isn't it? He's basically God to the
it's
likes
like,
of
so
me.
BBC Radio 5's podcast.
Exactly.
We got beaten down by the British Broadcasting Corporation. I'm okay with that.
Don't know, it feels like fascism to me.
Also, we literally started voting, I think, like 7 hours before they closed the vote.
We've got more listeners than Commode.
Definitely. I mean, who listens to a toilet?
Anyway,
quantum
right.
theory.
Quantum theory.
Feels like we're putting this off now.
It's quantum theory. Is this when Samuel Beckett stepped into the quantum chamber and disappeared and was never seen again?
Right. Everybody has quantum leap on your bingo cards. Please mark it off now.
We've just got to get it out of the way.
No, quantum theory is the branch of physics that deals with the world of atoms and the smaller subatomic particles
the
inside
the quantum realm.
Them.
Yeah. I know that from Ant-Man.
Pretty much. It's basically, we have the macro world, which we yeah. exist in.
We're talking about quarks.
And it has things like people. We're not explicitly talking about quarks, but yeah, quarks are...
They're in the quantum realm.
Subatomic.
So I get a point.
Yeah. Also, a fairly crap cheese.
Never had it.
No?
No.
Nothing to
We've
recommend.
We've really got to crack on with
Except
this.
Except there with tofu.
Come on.
Now, I suppose the key thing that you need to take away from... even if you only have a basic understanding of traditional physics...
Sure, sounds like me.
Which we do.
Yep.
Because not a physicist.
I've got a GCSE in physics, man.
Yeah, so have I.
Well,
actually, mine's like the combined science thing. But anyway...
you do combined science?
All of that stuff is kind of macro level or what's called classical physics.
Sure.
The minute you get to the point where we're dealing with the quantum level,
sure.
so we've got really, really small,
right.
shit gets weird. And I think actually it was Feynman himself who described...
Yeah.
Well, no, he said, it's spooky.
Well, Feynman drove around in a van smoking weed playing bongos all the time.
He may so. Well have said, this shit gets weird.
Yeah.
yeah.
I think he passed a mobile phone to Will Smith and said, shit just got real.
Weird.
No, that was Martin Lawrence. That was Martin weird. Lawrence. No, sorry. I always get Feynman and Martin Lawrence mixed up.
The main thing is that it behaves in a way that is totally different to what we're used to at the classical level.
Okay.
Like... Literally.
So they don't behave in any of the way the subatomic particles, whatever, these quantum particles don't behave in any of the ways we would expect them to
no.
based on classical physics.
No.
Cool.
So you can take all the physics that you know,
chuck it out
limited
the window.
As it is, and it's useless to us
so
at this
you
point.
Could say that if I didn't know anything, hypothetically, about classical physics, it wouldn't matter because none of it applies anyway.
No.
This is perfect.
Yep, so we're pretty much at we're in a really good place. So the concept of a quantum computer. In a classical computer, we have bits,
mm-hmm.
which are transistors.
Yep.
In a quantum computer, we have qubits.
You have qubits?
This, by the way, is why scientists should not be allowed to name things.
Is that why qubits call qubit?
Qubert.
Oh, you know, I'm getting it wrong. That's my bad.
No, see? I knew you were going to fall down that.
Is that why qubert is called qubert? No, because
Pick Mike up on the fact that he got qubert wrong.
Do you know in the movie Pixels, Josh Gad fucks Qbert because Qbert's taken the form of like a really hot woman and then they have babies and they're half Qbert, half Josh Gad?
Yep.
Cool.
Nothing to do with this.
As long as we're on the same page.
Yeah. So, what's a qubit? Fundamentally, a qubit is a quantum bit, which actually
you
means
gonna say that?
It is a particle or right. some form of quantum entity,
mm-hmm.
normally particles, and traditionally they are suspended in a crazy cold environment,
right,
where the temperature gets down to near absolute zero.
Is that so that they don't move so quickly we can't record them?
Don't know.
Just go yes.
I'm just going to go with...
Just go yes.
No.
Is the Higgs boson a qubit?
Sorry?
Is the Higgs boson a qubit? Or
it
is
could
it just
probably be made into a qubit, but given that we can't find any, it would probably be a bit
useless.
Oh,
I've got loads. Have people been looking for them?
Then a shoebox under your bed.
Yeah, that's so weird.
A really cold shoebox.
I wish I'd known.
It's just superconductive, hyper-cool yeah. shoebox.
Well, no, it's just a cooler full of beer. With Higgs bosons in it. Go on. Let's keep going.
How do you like your beer? Super cool. Fuck you, Coors Light.
Shot out of a cannon at the speed of
Fuck
light.
Fuck you, Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Jesus. Right, so qubits.
Right,
super
then.
Cold. Kept somewhere super cold.
Yeah, and...
The chillest of all the bits.
Qubits represent a couple of... Sorry, I'm just going to move on.
Yeah, you should. No, you've got to keep going.
Yeah,
keep going.
Qubits represent, or I'm in possession of, a couple of properties that are specific to quantum particles.
Right.
And one of these is the concept of superposition.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. And the other one is the concept of entanglement.
Right. So, reverse cowboy. Superposition, entanglement.
Yes.
They call it the pretzel.
Very, very cold, very tiny reverse cowgirls.
Nice. Jesus Christ. Right, so, they have superpositioning and entanglement.
Yeah.
which you are now going to explain to me.
Yes, because both of these are directly related to the application of quantum mechanics to a computer. They have a whole bunch of other properties.
Sure, which are not important to what we're talking
about.
Which
are not particularly relevant to quantum computing.
Fuck them then.
If you want to know all of the different bits about, you know, quantum mechanics,
then you're
then
a nerd.
I suggest go to university, get a physics degree, and then go back and get a maths degree, and then go and get your postgrad
go to Hearn
in advanced
and
physics,
like...
and then maybe do a doctorate. Basically, you need to be a freaking genius to work this shit
out.
Some
Stephen Hawking shit.
Yeah.
Cool.
Even he just dicks about with black holes because it's easier than quantum.
So glad that we're covering on this podcast this subject then. I literally was like, the listeners don't know, but when we narrow our choices down to three because we all write things down beginning with that letter onto a spreadsheet and then we vote for them, and then the three that get the most votes between the three of us then get chosen.
They're our shortlist, yes.
And I chose quantum computing because I was like, quantum computing sounds cool. So yeah, I fucked us on this one, guys. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So... when we're talking about quantum particles, qubits, sure. Superposition is... it's really, really hard to explain because it's all math.
I don't think you need the S on the end.
I kind of do, but anyway.
So?
It's the idea that a qubit can be in multiple states simultaneously.
Right, okay. So they can be in they can be in multiple positions within... a defined area at the same time.
Yeah, why not? Let's go with that.
Cool.
So if you think back to a classical bit, a classical bit is either one or zero.
Sure.
And it is always either one or zero.
Yeah, yeah. It's always in one of two states.
A quantum bit can be one, zero, or anything in between.
Right. So it exists in all planes within those two states.
Yes. And this is where we get onto the very famous thought experiment. For those of you playing the bingo at home, we're about to say...
I've put two and two together. Schrodinger's cat.
Ba-doom.
Oh my God, I'm totally
so
keeping up.
Schrodinger, of course, being a pioneering quantum physicist.
And a gold medalist at the Olympics for archery.
No.
No, I tried. I can't blame you for trying.
He smoked a pipe.
Did he?
Actually, I think balls smoked a pipe. But anyway... so he was one of the kind of original Copenhagen set. He kicked around with Einstein, Bohr, Heisenberg.
Oh, imagine the parties. They're probably quite badass, actually. As much as I'm taking a piss.
Probably a lot of opium.
Oh. Einstein pulled, man.
Einstein fucked.
Einstein fucked.
And the idea behind Schrödinger's cat is to... it's a thought experiment.
A cat can exist in two states because you don't
actually... to represent superposition. Yeah. But you put the cat in the box and you don't know until you look at it. Because this is the key thing that everybody always overlooks.
But isn't that... what did we talk about before? Was it Heisenberg's...
Uncertainty principle. Yeah.
Right? Like, the very act of observation...
We're like doing barroom quantum physics. And literally, by the way, that is the extent of my barroom quantum
physics.
This
is also meant to be the point of this podcast, so we don't need to... Yeah. We are by no means experts. We know physicists, and they are going to be angry with us.
Do we?
I know physicists, and they are going to be angry with me.
I know... oh, actually, I do know one who might listen. Hey, Dave.
Sorry, Karim. He hasn't even got a smartphone. He hasn't listened to this. Jesus.
Right.
Hey, Karim. I'm seeing whatever I want. Anyway, whatever.
The cat example is a good example of the idea that it can be either or.
So until you observe it, it exists in all states.
Yes.
Right.
Except there is a fine point on this. So if we say, think of a light switch, it can be on or off.
Right.
But there's also, you can rock the switch and it can kind of be all the way in between.
Yeah.
Yeah? So that's basically what we're talking about.
Right.
Except instead of being a switch, which is one plane. No, even the cat example fails. We're actually dealing with a sphere. So rather than picking the North Pole or the South Pole, you can pick any point on the sphere.
Right.
And it can be in any of those. So
Jesus, so we're also talking in three dimensions. We're not talking about up and down, whatever. We're talking any coordinate, long, whatever, within a three-dimensional sphere.
Yeah, and when you consider that quantum physicists routinely have to create dimensions to make the maths work.
So I was going
to
say, a three-dimensional sphere as opposed to a two-dimensional sphere, which is a circle. Shut up, I'm trying to sound clever. Right, so yeah, so the physicists have to do all the maths to work out what every possible permutation of where it
is. And the trouble is, they can't know.
God, wouldn't it be easy just to, like, get a job in a bank or something?
Again, this is probably why, as a species, we're not going to make it. The trouble is you can't know, because the minute you look at it,
right,
the entire state collapses down to either or.
Sure, of course, yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah. which isn't means going half as badly as you thought it was going to.
No. Wait. Which means that basically what we're dealing with is probabilistic states.
Right.
So you don't know whether or not it's this, that, or
sure,
the other.
It's all a,
but you can
it's
have
all a,
an educated guess, yeah, as to how likely it is to be this, that, or the
right,
other.
Right.
Measured over time, of course, multiple probabilities.
But then surely basing any theories off of a guessed position of this thing is all kind of like, oh, it's all hypothetical.
Yeah.
That's what they call the hypothetical physics.
This entire thing is hypothetical.
Right, okay, cool.
Except it can actually be used. Superposition, I think we've kind of covered.
Yeah, that makes sense.
To the degree that I'm comfortable explaining.
Listen, if it makes sense to me, then our very intelligent and handsome listeners must be getting it.
Please, go and check out the Wikipedia page and enjoy some of the nastiest maths I've seen.
And understand the pain
ever
that Rob's had to explain this to this monkey.
I've been studying this shit for 2 weeks.
Oh, well.
You can't learn quantum theory in 2 weeks.
I don't know what these theoretical physicists complain about. You've been looking at Wikipedia for 2 weeks, you poor bastard.
Not just Wikipedia. I read papers.
Ooh.
And by read, I mean, I literally read the words. I have no idea what they mean.
Listen, man, I had to try and find making of stuff for the quest.
True. I think you drew the short straw this month.
Truly, I am the hero.
Right. The other property that we've got to deal with is...
Entanglement.
Entanglement. Qubits can be entangled.
Right.
Right. So we have a qubit, which is our hypercooled particle.
Sure.
That can be in all the states at once until we look at it.
Smart.
And we can basically take one, and then we can bring another one.
Right.
And then we do some quantum magic.
Some quantum mixology.
Basically.
Nice.
And we make a qubit cocktail.
Ah. Did I just invent a metaphor that's going to help in beds?
No.
So I can talk.
But, yeah, so effectively we can entangle them, at which point something really weird happens. And it is really weird, if you think about it.
Right.
So that basically, if you change... I mean, I suppose let's talk very quickly about the properties that qubits have, not the things that they can do.
Right,
but
okay.
Normally when we're talking about a qubit, we're talking about a property called spin.
Okay.
Which is basically clockwise or anti-clockwise.
Mm-hmm.
Right? We're happy with that as a concept.
Yes, fine.
Good. It's two-dimensional. We can
well,
deal.
Well, first let's break it down and define a clock. No, I'm kidding. That's fine. Keep going.
All right. Clockwise, anti-clockwise. I've got a digital watch on. Shit. It's a fun point, right? You know, I'm wearing my Apple Watch.
Yeah.
Why do I still have an analog face on a watch? When is the analog finally going to fall away? Because we don't need it anymore.
It's just nice, isn't it? It's like a nostalgia job.
Yeah, I suppose.
I've got a mechanical watch, which is why I've got a mechanical face. You've got a mechanical face. All right, let's keep cracking on. Come on.
Right. So, qubits can have spin.
A noose.
And effectively, the way that we choose between 1 and 0 is we can change the spin. But right. Superposition means that you cannot determine exactly which spin it's in until you observe it, at which point it's in 1, so therefore it can be in any of the spins.
So hang on. Sorry, you can't determine the spin like a normal bit, because you determine the spin on a normal bit because of the 1 and the 0, but you can't do that with a qubit because you don't know which way it's going until you look at it.
Yeah.
And that affects the way it spins.
Yes.
Cool.
So the quantum state collapses down into an absolute.
Yes.
Right. Entanglement has the side effect that if we have two qubits that are entangled, and they can be entangled in different ways.
Right.
You know, legs, arms.
The hair gets knotted together in an Avatar-style way.
Yeah. Some form of weird Siamese
linkage.
Do
they fuck those horses? Anyway, let's keep going on.
Linkage, sorry.
In Avatar, they're fucking them horses,
yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah, it's a little bit like, put it in here. The first time you do it, they will react very badly to you.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly.
You just raped a horse for the first time in its life.
Yeah. Conditioning a horse with hair rape.
Again, we're putting it off.
James Cameron. Anyway, yeah, no, right. Entanglement, you can do it in a number of ways.
But one of the most common ways to entangle...
Sorry, I've never been so forceful and confident in my life. We're doing it in a number of ways! Entanglement! Quantum entanglement!
Is that if you change the spin on one bit...
Right.
The other bit will change to match it.
Talking about qubits.
Yeah.
Right. They mirror.
Yeah. So
and is that because they're entangled?
Yes.
Right.
But where it gets weird is you'd expect that, like, in our world, it's like, well, we can put two wheels on an axle, and
not
if you spin
world.
one wheel.
We're not on our wheel, we're in a
other wheel will spin the same
sure,
way.
Sure, yeah,
right?
Of course, yeah, of course.
But they have to have a physical linkage and what have you. If you put two wheels.
And this is where we have to discuss string theory.
No, we don't get into string theory, not today. Saving that for S.
Oh, good. We're not doing that.
No, if you were to, in our world, you put two wheels and one is just over there and one's over there.
But they're
there
not physically locked together in terms of how we think about physically locked together.
Yeah, then what happens to the other wheel? Nothing.
Right.
Except in the quantum world, you can not only have this entanglement that means that you spin one way and the other one will spin, but they can be delocalized.
Right.
So you can take your bits, qubits, you can entangle them.
Right.
Entangle your bits.
Entangle my bits.
And then you can split them up over fairly significant distances to the point that actually physicists currently posit that you can split them up over infinite distances.
And they still mirror each other.
And they still mirror each other.
Now, I remember back in there watching something on TV, and it was a Stephen Hawking's documentary. That's right. And he talked about antimatter and matter having a counterpart, always having a every piece of matter has a piece of antimatter counterpart, and they mirror each other regardless of the distance between them. I'm already knowing the answer.
It's not
this.
Matter and antimatter, but yes, he was talking about.
He was talking about this.
A concept called quantum
attention.
Teleportation.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Quantum teleportation. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right.
None of which has anything to do with quantum computing,
perfect.
But it's a good example of entanglement.
I'm glad I brought it up.
Yeah. The idea behind entanglement is that if we put two qubits in, and we entangle two qubits, changes to one, cascade onto the other, and if we put three qubits in, the same thing happens.
Right.
So a quantum processor is made up of a number of different bits.
Yep.
But because they're all entangled, and they can all be in all of the positions at all of the times.
Oh, so you give one of the bits a task to do, and every other bit starts doing the same thing, processing it faster?
That simple. Because again, you're thinking in terms of our world.
Yes.
Yeah, no, that's straight parallelization.
I knew it wouldn't be.
But what we are dealing with is a situation where you can affect a bit and it has a knock-on throughout the entire system.
Sure.
Which doesn't happen in a classic computer. You flip a bit, the other bit's like, what?
Whatevs.
What? I'm good.
Switch is a switch, bro.
I'm still zero, motherfucker. I'm
pretty
nothing.
Gangster, these bits.
Yeah. Well, they'll never amount to... No? Never amount to anything? They're one or zero.
No, I'm not following you.
It was a maths joke. A babble. Right.
Sounds like me, maths jokes. So, right, entanglement. So, you can have as many bits as you like, all entangled together. Get all your bits. Get all the bits in the world if you want. Get them all together in a bag. And then once you start to molest one bit, all the other bits react in the same way.
Not the same way. They can also react in slightly different ways.
So it's Catholic school.
Entangled. Yeah.
It's a Catholic boarding
Why
school.
Why not?
Just making a... Anyway, let's move on. Right.
So we understand the two basic properties that make a quantum processor possible if you have qubits.
Entanglement and superpositioning.
Nice. Just superposition, but, you know, good. You've got two buzzwords. Now we can talk very quickly about some of the challenges of building a quantum computer.
Understanding what the fuck anyone is talking about would be the first one. What do you mean? Say
then
what?
Again, building a normal computer is quite hard.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to make transistors and stuff, and that requires a degree
making
of
something that's
fairly advanced
I don't think
physics.
I can make a switch that goes one or zero. I don't think I write it on a bit of paper at this point. Right, so, the challenges.
Building them is hard.
Sure.
Because we have to super cool stuff.
Yeah.
Which means we need liquid nitrogen, and we need to get shit down to, like, Kelvin, and we need to compress gases.
Minus 237 Celsius.
Yeah.
It is.
Except we don't actually get to absolute zero because it's impossible.
Sure.
And if you were to get something to absolute zero, I'm pretty sure the world ends. Or even
like
the universe.
When you Google.
Yeah. but at the same time, all of this kind of super coolie nonsense is really hard to do.
Sure.
Just physically. It's like,
yeah, just
you can't just stick him in your freezer.
Speaking, Regardless of working out the fucking maths of it,
trying to get
getting
something
everything
down to near absolute zero requires a fairly significant quantity of know-how and nous.
Yeah.
And a massive amount of very cold liquids.
Engineers, innit?
Also,
I'm contributing.
Hey, you it's rare that you and I go into a topic knowing about as much as each other,
ahead. I feel like for this, you need like a Sheldon and a Simon Helberg. I can't remember the names of the characters from Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
You need all of them, though. That joke was going to be awesome. But
yeah, they all get it.
No, they all get it.
I don't. Also, to manipulate qubits, we need to use laser beams or something.
Right?
No,
literally, laser beams or something? You can't just use a really small pair of tweezers.
And spin it. or a tiny ping pong paddle.
Do you know what you need to get? It's Hank Pym. Tiny ping pong. Perfect for here. Yeah.
Go see, spinning bits.
Spinning them bits.
I'm miming spinning a bit, but it's not working. Right. The other problem is that quantum effects make stability an issue in these kind of processors. Because quantum effects being that if you observe the state of a qubit, it resolves and collapses down into...
So you've got to manipulate these things without actually looking at what you're doing.
Yeah, so basically, subatomic particles that have to be kept at near zero temperatures, you have to bounce laser beams off them without looking.
It's like when you do, like I'm going to pot the black, and then you look at your opponent in the eye while you do it, and then most of the time it doesn't work, but when it does, you've had a breakthrough in physics.
But the black is the tiniest thing in the universe... Right. And the pool hall is as close to being as cold as the universe can be.
Nice.
And your pool cue is a laser beam.
So, yeah. So, just standard Friday.
Man, I need to know where the hell you go to play Laser Quest.
I'll take it there afterwards. I'll take it there afterwards.
No, actually what it means is...
So you have to be pretty fucking exact with your math to make sure...
Yes, and also they're incredibly sensitive to external stimuli. Don't make the obvious joke,
No,
please.
I just want to ask one question.
Yes.
How do you know if it's been successful? Because if you look at it, doesn't that affect the result?
Yes! This is the bit I don't
This
get.
Is like losing the game. By the way, I just lost the game. This is like the game. Yeah. You've always been playing the game. You didn't know you were playing the game. As soon as you remember the game, you lose the game. It's that.
Yeah. So I'm assuming that what they actually do is make probabilistic determinations on the potential state of the quantum computer,
and then make
which they can't confirm.
And then make a probabilistic determination about whether they've been successful or not.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I could be a theoretical physicist.
No.
Just keep shouting, no, it worked! No, don't look! You'll fuck it up! It definitely worked. You've got to trust me. You've got to trust me it worked. No, if you know if you look at it. Heisenberg, bitch! You know if you look at it. Good to hear
right,
that.
So and it's not even just the observation or the stuff that we know about the quantum state, and we know, of course.
It's the fact that they are subject to
interference.
Right.
So any fluctuation or noise from the environment can
hacking our quantum bits.
I was thinking more just like, electromagnesis, which is all around us. The fact that we're getting bombarded by photons every 10 minutes.
And don't forget, after 1940, after the initial nuclear tests, radioactivity in the general environment is massively different.
Mm.
That's how they age wines,
Anyway.
No, it's because after the nuclear tests, there was suddenly lots of background radiation in the Earth's environment that didn't exist pre that, so they can tell if a wine was created before that because it doesn't have any of that radiation soaked into the wine.
Nice.
It's cool, eh? You know where I learned that from? That Timothy Hutton show on TNT, Leverage.
I've never seen it.
I highly recommend it. Seriously, it's fucking good. It's good. It's
okay.
Like, it's arguably better than Ocean's 12 and 13.
Ocean's 13?
Oceans, 12 and 13, arguably be better than both of those. It's fucking good.
So, I mean, the Quest was better than Oceans 12.
Beth Rees graph is in it? Oh, yeah.
Right, anyway. Noise in the environment causes problems and what have you.
Sure.
Just to very quickly clarify something, because there are various moving bits inside a quantum processor that...
Right. Moving qubits?
Bear in mind, a processor deals with the concept of input and output. That's how they work.
Sure.
So voltage comes in at one end in a classical system and goes out at the other.
Yeah.
We can't observe what's happening inside a quantum processor, but we can observe the output.
Of course.
Otherwise, they'd be completely fucking pointless.
So can we say, well, that kind of correlates with what we expected to see?
Yeah, so what basically you verify a quantum result is not by looking at what happened inside the processor itself, because that will change it.
Yeah.
You look at the output.
Right.
And because it's probabilistic, you can actually run the same calculation multiple times.
Well, they're only doing
these
things.
Same output.
They're doing all the math, and they're working out what they think the output should be based on what the math is, assuming that the math is correct, or understanding of math is correct. So if the output isn't what the experiment is to confirm the math, not the other way around. They're not doing the experiment to work out the math. So if the output is different from what they expected, then they can say, well, actually, maybe whatever's going on inside this super cool box isn't right.
Yes, and also, because it's probabilistic, sometimes it will be different.
Sure.
But you run the same calculation a number of times, and
you run the same experiment a number of times,
end up with the right result by virtue of probability.
Yeah, sure.
Hey.
Well, it's like the thing when they expected photons shot at the sheet of graphite to
graphene in a certain way,
and then they were like, oh, it behaves as a wave and a particle at the same time. They discovered that based on the experiment.
Fundamental quantum observation.
Sure,
yes.
Buckyballs. That's what that's called. I read a book once.
Okay.
It is called Buckyballs.
I remember Jack Reacher using it.
Did he?
It was how he defeated the drug dealers in that small American town.
Did
where
he?
The waitress was... No.
I was like, what? God damn it, you Eiffel Towered me, you son of a bitch.
Right. Why, therefore, if these things are so fucking hard to understand,
right,
and so unbelievably
exactly
hard to build,
yeah,
and incredibly difficult to keep stable and usable, why are we bothering?
Pussy.
Is literally, I think, the least likely outcome of telling. If you walk up to a girl at a bar,
it feels like the reason that man does anything.
I flip qubits.
Feynman fucked.
Feynman fucks, Einstein fucks, but they're the old guard.
Hawking could have.
I'm pretty sure.
Let's be respectful.
Okay, fine. Draw a veil.
Something that I didn't give to the entire Japanese people during the Nintendo episode, but apparently this one dude, I'm going to. Tim Berners-Lee, he fucks.
I'm waiting for the next word to come out of your mouth.
Don't know what you're talking
about. Right.
Seriously though, dick pics. We've got to keep going with this. It's going to be 4 hours long. Sorry.
The side effect of the quantum stuff is twofold. Firstly, we get true exponential growth, and we're not doing that again.
No, we're not.
But as we add more qubits to a system, so if we add more bits to a standard computer system, it grows, it can handle bigger stuff.
Sure.
Because qubits are entangled and can also hold superposition, the amount of data that can be processed is exponentially increased with every one we add.
Can I ask one question?
Yes.
Well, I'm going to ask several, but I'm going to ask this one now. Can I ask one question now? You know how a transistor is shrinking all the time and that's one bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you house a qubit in? A box of supercooled something?
Yeah.
But how big are these boxes? Are they smaller than the transistor?
Tiny.
So they're super microscopic.
The actual core of a quantum computer is
bigger than a brick bin.
We're dealing with subatomic particles or particles,
sure, which are pretty small.
That are normally they're like nanometers apart, and you don't need many of them.
Sure. Okay.
A workable quantum computer experiment can be built using 3 qubits.
Right. And so the tiny box they're in way smaller
than
a
processor.
How did they build a tiny box? Isn't that the same physical limitation as a transistor eventually?
Well,
until you just can't see
bigger.
The tiny box? Oh, okay, fine.
They've got to fit the laser beams in the pool hall.
Oh, yeah, they've got to fire them laser beams. How small is the lens for the laser beam?
It's pretty tiny.
I'm going to shut up. I'll let you talk.
So if we take a conventional 20-bit computer...
Right.
And if we're talking about the state of that computer, then we've got 20 bits that can all be 1 or 0. So we only need 20 numbers to describe the complete state of that setup at any given time,
Yes.
And it's 10, 110, whatever. A 20-qubit quantum computer requires over 1 million numbers to describe the current state.
Right.
Yeah. So the growth that they get by adding more qubits to a quantum computer is crazy insanely different.
Right. Yeah, no, okay, I think I'm following you. Yeah, okay, fine.
And bear in mind that the bigger the number, the more they can do.
Yeah. So it's way more numbers, smaller amount of space, but way more power.
Yes. I think that sounds right. Right. So we're going to roll with it.
Cool. I love to think that I asked a question in minute 8 that set us off on some weird tangent and everything since then has been totally wrong.
Quite possibly, but there is an alternate universe where... No.
But it's fine. I keep making dick jokes, and that's why you're here. That's why people paid their money.
No,
oh, by the way, we're going behind a paywall this month.
The question...
We're not. We're definitely not.
We're never going behind a paywall.
Stitch Premium!
Seriously, who would pay for this?
Tramps.
With that complexity comes the general quantum setup, the fact that they can be in all of these states. Oh, by the way, did I point out that when we're talking about them being in any state in between, they're in all of them simultaneously, right?
Yes. No, I figured... Well,
awesome.
I figured
that's important
that
when I completely gloss over the math
that's what you
surrounding
meant, but
the two things that quantum computers are actually currently very good at.
Right.
And one of them is factoring prime numbers, or factoring any kind of number.
Okay, yeah.
Now, cast your mind back to January of last year.
Right.
When we sat in the Blue Note pub.
Asymmetrical encryption.
And we talked about asymmetrical encryption.
Yep.
All of which is based on factoring prime numbers.
Yes.
And the fact that it's incredibly hard to reverse engineer.
Yes.
For a quantum computer, it's not hard at all.
No, bragging.
They can do it like that.
Like this.
As a result, an awful lot of the research that's going into quantum processing is geared around basically the fact that a successful quantum processor will probably be able to break most of the encryption that is currently used everywhere.
Oh, wow. Okay, right.
And it will be able to do it incredibly quickly.
Sure, okay. Like this.
The other thing that it can be used for is modelling quantum multi-body solutions.
Oh, right.
Or systems.
Yeah.
And when you consider that at the moment, if we want to model a quantum-level multi-body system, we have to dig a giant tunnel under Switzerland, seven miles round, and physically throw atoms at each other.
Sure, at the speed of light.
Near as damage.
Near enough.
Yeah. A quantum computer would
imagine
be able to...
Imagine the size of that catapult.
Boing!
Bart Simpson having the time of his life.
A quantum computer can actually simulate this.
Oh, right, okay.
Because it can do all the calculations.
Oh,
you
can do the calculation without having to physically dig a big fucking hole.
Yeah, you don't have to dig a big fucking hole. No Hadron Collider.
Well, I feel like someone should have built one of them instead of digging a big fucking hole on
the
Switzerland.
At the moment, it's easier to build a big fucking hole.
Oh, right, okay, well...
Because they're really hard to make.
To be fair, based on the last 40 minutes, it sounds like it.
The big argument for, certainly when it comes to factoring, is that it will break encryption, but also that it will lead rise to the next generation of quantum encryption.
Yeah, sure. So it doesn't just break a code. It's not about hacking into whatever the fuck. It's also about designing better security and better encryption.
But in theory, if you have encrypted data using an existing scheme, somebody with a quantum computer could decrypt that data in a very trivial way.
Sure.
Which they cannot do with a classical computer.
Sure, of course.
So in other words, Tim Berners-Lee is now desperately trying to work out how to re-encrypt his picture selection.
He's considering sitting on the board of how to make a quantum computer. So presumably then that leads to like some kind of pseudo-arms race between...
Yep.
Which countries have got shitloads of money that they can invest in quantum computers? I would suggest not North Korea. I would suggest probably America.
America's got a bit. Yeah, they're focusing on it.
It's got a qubit.
They've got good research teams working on it, and they've got the entire private sector working on it.
Yeah.
The most recent example of demonstrable quantum encryption, as in the next level...
If you say Facebook, I'm going to punch you in the face.
No, China.
Oh, okay.
The Chinese government have spent 10 years building what would you call it? It's like a pan-Turanian Earth and space. Network, which has satellites and fiber optic cable.
Right.
And they're using this to basically do...
It's a quantum network built across Earth and space.
Yeah.
That's some fucking James Bond shit.
Mm-hmm.
Is it satellites, like, armed with diamonds and shit? And...
No,
really?
Because that's ridiculous.
Yeah, clearly, because what we're talking about is obvious. So it's a pan... environment.
It's just a combination.
It's mental.
It's the same shit that makes your cell phone work, right? Satellites and fiber optics.
Yeah, sounds the same.
And the internet. But they have built an explicit network for experimenting with quantumly encrypted communication.
Right, okay.
Where the initial key generation and exchange is quantum, not traditional classic computing.
Yeah.
And they've done it. They did a 30-minute video conference a year or so ago. May even have been a month or so ago.
It was quantumly encrypted.
It was, the keys were generated using a
quantum
computing process.
But it's only unhackable because no one else has got a quantum network.
Yeah.
But could a quantum network hack a quantum network like it ain't no big deal?
No.
Right, so it's not because a case of once we've got the same technology, it's all much of a
match. All bets are off. No, it's basically we just have to make sure that we have the same technology. So as you say, it is an arms race.
Yeah.
I will not permit a qubit gap.
Nice! Wrong! Raising the brow of this podcast.
Normally at this point, we would be looking for an amazing fact. And I haven't got one.
I feel like it's all quite an amazing fact, though.
My notes it's all fucking amazing. Believable, question mark, no, wizards.
This is the first time I'm actually being like, this motherfucker's made a load of shit up. Somebody said quantum computing, just made a load of shit up on the plane on the way home from London yesterday, and been like, you'll believe it. He doesn't fucking know. And are you right?
Yeah, I could have done, but this is, as best I can tell, at least backed by what's out there on the internet.
If we do have any quantum physicists, then by all means, we'll have you on the show. Yeah. And like, but we won't have you on the tech segment, we'll only have you on the movie segment. If you're a quantum physicist, you can come on the show, but you have to talk about RoboCop.
Or Interstellar.
That's a long way coming off. We'll get Chip What's-His-Face from Interstellar. Right. We get Chip What's-His-Face from it, yeah, perfect.
So I suppose to kind of round off a long, rambling, and to my mind, incredibly unsatisfying journey through quantum computing, because it's not like we've actually learned how any of this shit actually works.
No, I also don't know what we use it for, other than the encryption.
At the moment, honestly, not
much. Is it just the encryption?
The concept of factoring and the concept of modelling multi-body systems, a couple of other algorithms, they haven't worked out much else because...
So it's so far ahead, it's so on the bleeding edge, mm-hmm. that they know the theory of how it works, but they haven't even worked out what they can do with it, because they haven't
beyond
worked out how it works.
Beyond these two or three very specific use cases.
So it might have a million things they could do with it.
Inevitably.
It will, sure.
But right now, we are, we're at like the dawn of the computer.
This is one of those things that feels like we talk about this at such a high level, about this incredible bleeding edge technology, this incredible thing that's being discovered, but we don't know what the fuck actually we're going to do with it. It makes me feel like we're incredibly, as a people, we're incredibly smart, but also pretty dumb. Do you know what I mean? Like, we can do all this stuff. We don't know what it does yet, but it might be good. I don't know.
All I'll say is, without judgment, that maybe if more of the species spent time, you know, learning the math and working this stuff, and less time watching Futurama back-to-back for the fourth time. It's really hard. And there are a very small subset of people in the world who can actually make head nor tail of this. I'm not one of them.
Clearly.
That said...
That was unnecessary, I'm sorry.
Let me stop here. It's like a necessary burn. I just laid myself out as being utterly ignorant in every possible way.
You really laid your heart open.
I know nothing. I know that which I do not know. And
you laid your heart open and I just shot you.
What a twat.
Oh, sorry.
No. State of play, March the 5th this year.
Yep.
Google announced their Bristlecone project, which is I think, 72-qubit. Quantum computer? I might have that number wrong. I didn't write it down. That's still being built.
Right.
IBM, our faves. Bear in mind that IBM, actually, in the 60s, were one of the first companies or people who worked for IBM, to posit quantum computing as a feasible thing.
Sure.
They were in very early doors.
Yeah, well, you got slave labor, you can do
what
you like.
They actually have a project called IBM Q.
Somebody's got to get a better fucking creative department in these companies. Bristlecone. What are we going to call our quantum project? IBM Q? Yeah, fuck it, that'll do. Make it sexy.
Why? It's IBM.
Because God knows the science isn't.
But you know what is sexy? They've actually got working quantum processors.
That will suck your dick.
That are online.
No, okay.
And if you want to run a small run quantum calculation, you can do it.
I can go to a website.
You can go to the IBM Q Labs website, sign up for an account, and assuming that you know how to write a program for a quantum computer...
Obviously.
And it's limited operations, but you can actually... Okay. Now,
now need to work out the most frivolous calculation for us to work out. How can I make sure that I have a pint in every one of these pubs as quickly as possible? Or something like the most frivolous, stupid thing. Listeners... If we have any geniuses listening, why would you listen to this?
I think we need to think. If Tim Berners-Lee were to take a pic of everyone's dick in the world,
if you were
what's
to take
the
a,
most effective way for him to do it?
If you were to take a photo of your dick in every town of England, what is the quickest way of doing it?
That said, most researchers agree that we are very unlikely to see practical application of quantum computing outside of lab environments and very limited
tests. So this is just scientists jerking each other off?
In the next few years. They're building this.
In the next few years, I'm sorry. I thought you meant at all.
And something decades.
Okay.
But it's coming.
Yep.
And when it arrives, I'm guessing nobody will still fucking understand it.
Sure. But it's like anything that arrives. that we all use all the time. We don't understand how our phones work either. Well, you do, obviously. But I don't. Then it'll be that. That'll be it.
There we go.
That wasn't so bad. I get it. I'm going to phone up IBM. Find out how many dick pics I can take in a town. This has been the tech segment, the extremely confusing tech segment, which I hope you followed along with, because, I don't know, for We're Drunk and We Know Things, we have been recording in JB's smokehouse. I've been drinking Brew by Numbers, so has Rob. Our producer
1128, has been, by the way, is amazing.
1128, I like this, 2116, the coffee pale ale. It's a real game changer for me. It's very, very good. Our producer has been Reno Vegas. Join us next time when we do R, which will hopefully be less of a ball ache.
We are now the 53rd and 54th variation.
Isn't it 57? So we were 58 and 59.
No, they had to cut back the list. I mean, Brexit, man.
Brexit. Yeah, can't get them Spanish Toms.
It's Thomas. He's making ketchup, except he's not anymore. Fucking hell. He's been fired.
Right, so anyway.
Still easier than quantum.
Still easier than quantum.